As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What's good, Atlanta? This is the Blog and Dirty Podcast, where Dirty Bird is the word. If you haven't heard, I'm your host, John Bueller, lead writer for FanSided. Thanks for joining in today. This is an Atlanta Falcons podcast for the FanSided network of sites, Blog and Dirty. My name is John Bueller. Again, I cover college football primarily for FanSided, but I'm a diehard Atlanta Falcons fan, and they're putting me through it, and they're putting all of us through it. But before we begin, be sure to smash that like button, hit that subscribe button, give us a five-star review on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere this podcast really helps the show grow. Got a short week this week here because your Atlanta Falcons, after playing a terrible game versus the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday, they got Thursday Night Football this week at the rival Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have kind of been in control of the division. For the most part, they lost a really close game week one on a Younghoe Koo miss. Tampa's kind of been in control. They've been kind of sputtering a little bit, but like New Orleans is just as bad as we are. Carolina's not quite there. So by default, Tampa's got to win the division. So got a kind of a short show today for you guys. Again, I'll be coming to you guys again semi-live with 3 yards in a cloud of punt. In the post game after what will probably be the Falcons' 10th loss of the season on Thursday night. So, you know, I'll be in rare form with that. I'll be in a different location because all my fiance and I do is dogs at this point. So, you know, without further ado, let's get on to our first run of the day. I'm going to run with this. This is the one thing I kind of feel confident about. I got a feeling that the pass rush could be a difference maker for the team this time around. There's other things, too, that I think we could spend. Maybe we could catch Tampa while they're napping. Again, it's a short week, so, you know, it's against a rival. The level of speed is going to intensify a little bit. Keep in mind that Kirk Cousins beat the Buccaneers twice last year, you know, including the Thursday night game here in Atlanta, in and around, right around Halloween, if you will. And then he kind of turned into a pumpkin afterwards. But outside of last week where he threw a lot of picks, he's played okay. It hasn't really been his fault that the team's not winning. But I'll say this. I think the pass rush could be a difference maker. I think in the week one, the only time they got pressure on Baker Mayfield was like singular. It might have been one or two sacks of note. We have seen the Falcons to be able to, you know, draw up some pressure against everybody they've been playing, particularly with the elevation of James Pierce Jr. as a star performer. Jalen Walker looks great as well. And again, you know, the whole cast of characters there in the pass rush and the defensive front seven, they'll play hard for a while. And then the offense will stink. They'll get their ass kicked. And then we'll get carved to pieces by a high-quality team. Again, I don't know if Tampa is at the same level as Seattle is right now. But it always seems like Sam Darnold saves his best for when he plays the Falcons for whatever reason. Or really when he goes up against Kirk Cousins. Not that they were ever teammates or anything like that. But their paths have crossed, sort of, so to speak, here anyway. But I feel like this pass rush like you knock Tampa out of it early. Maybe you force a turnover. Maybe you can steal some points defensively because we can't trust our offense at this point now with the people in charge of it. But, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, if we had the pass rush we did now versus what we had at the start of the year, if we would have won that game, you know, if things would have been different. You know, I kind of go back to last year's season, you know, last year's season. It's been a long weekend, man. Long week too. But here's kind of what I'll say to that. I remember last year how like the secondary was playing so well at the beginning of the year, and then it fell apart. Then it was kind of like the offense was playing so good, then it fell apart. It's just kind of like we can't get everything going at the same time because this team is so disjointed. Only the really joy I have watching the Falcons play right now is to see the young players step up on defense and, you know, watch Bijan Robinson kind of go to work. Haven't seen Drake London play in a while. It has been nice to see Kyle Pitts start to make some plays, but this team's toast. And the fact we don't have a first-round draft pick next year kind of stinks because, you know, I'd be way more involved talking about the draft at this point, but right now I really don't care. The good news is the guy that was our first-round draft pick, you know, James Pierce Jr. He's on the team now. So like that's all I can really hope for here. I hope that it makes a difference this time around. I'm not entirely sure, but you know, we got to be optimistic here. Okay. That was enough optimism for the show. Let's move on to some pessimism here. Some second run. I'm not going to lie. I came across this on social media. Somebody created a superhero poster featuring Raheem Morris and Zach Robinson as a find a way man and pistol boy. It's absolutely hilarious. You know, it's bad when a coach becomes synonymous with a phrase within the media, or, you know, a coach also becomes synonymous with our player becomes synonymous with like a gimmick, if you will. You know, you look at the New York Yankees, you know, it's right out there in front of us. They always says that, you know, all the Dan Quinn nonsense of, you know, be about the ball and, you know, every sort of redundant cliche you could imagine find, you know, from the Pete Carroll tree. Yeah, the Pete Carroll tree it's become a branch. Like, it's a tumbleweed. It's not doing a damn thing right now. There are a few teams in the NFL that are worse than the Falcons. Like the Raiders and the Commanders might be among them. But, man, no time for that. And then, you know, they talk about pistol boy with the offense that Zach Robinson runs, particularly with Michael Penix Jr. out there. You know, we used to always like slander Michael Thomas with the Saints and call him a slant boy because that's all he could do is run a slant. You know, we also, you know, it's better than being like, you know, 11 personnel to people to death with the Sean McVay offense or the gimmicky air raid. It's just whatever it is with Josh Heupel. It's just when you have stuff like this kind of be attached to it, it's kind of hard to shed that reputation. But I saw this. So it's like Raheem Morris is like on a chopper riding like this, his find a way man looking up. And then you got a pistol boy, Zach Robinson, in the sidecar with like a notepad looking like Robin. So it's like Batman and Robin. It's unbelievable. It's so funny. And I think it's like, you know, that these guys are dead in the water when D. Orlando Ledbetter and the AJC is like, you know, quote tweeting on Twitter. He's like, this is so funny. Not to say that D-Led really carries much weight or anything like that, but I mean, he is the beat writer for the AJC that is no longer in a circulation. I mean, it's an online platform, which is great. But just to kind of hear after every single game where the Falcons just get their ass hellaciously kicked, and for Raheem Morris to say, you know what, we gotta find a way. We gotta find a new way to do this. We gotta find a way. And I guess like kind of just because it's comedy, because like I've got four more games of this crap and then we're going to hire some other guy who's not going to be good because that's just who we are. I just kind of want to unpack like maybe why it's failed for these two guys real quick, and then I'll get to the second half of our show. I think for Raheem Morris, what has hurt us is he may have been a great defensive coordinator for the Rams. He may be a very savvy defensive mind. It may be some combination of the Peter principle. He may be a very likable guy. He may have a lot of respect for the organization, but it's almost like his lack of coaching acumen or really his inability to adjust within the context of a game has ruined any chance he'll ever be an NFL head coach again. I don't know what he's going to do after this. He'll probably go back to the Rams and probably be like the best defensive coordinator in the league, because that's just our lot in life here. But it became readily apparent during the Panthers game in week 3 when there was a few plays that didn't go their way and they're down big and we didn't see any adjustments here. And I think when you have a coach like that who cannot adjust in a league where everybody is a professional, everybody is, for lack of a better word, like the best of the best, like you can't just sit on your thumbs. You can't twiddle your fingers. Everybody deserves better. And again, the fan base is completely tuned out of this team. And I don't blame them one bit. This is the worst stretch of the team's been since I've been alive. Again, I was born in 1989, so I kind of caught the tail end of the 82 to 91 downward spiral there with, you know, the Gerald Riggs years, basically. And probably the tail end of Bart, if I'm not mistaken. But what I'll say is, like, with this, it's just like,
hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair. Every style, every home.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
We can't be coming up dead every time we play a game because we're just so horribly coached. And honestly, I think Raheem Morris, he's not going to do it. I think he's best served to go coach in college. I think he could be a motivator in that way. I think he could be a recruiter. He gets schmooze. He can pander. But when it comes to the schematics, he's just so over his skis right now. Maybe if he goes back to a different role, maybe he'll be great at it again. But right now, he's forgotten how to do algebra. And everybody out there in the NFL is able to do, multi-derivative calculus. This guy does not solve for X. And speaking about a guy who doesn't know how to solve for X, Zach Robinson. The reason it's probably spelled Z-A-C is because he couldn't do more than one more letter there. The H threw him off. Maybe it's an X. Zaxby's. I'd rather trust the Zaxby's right down the street to get my order right than Zach Robinson to call a play. It's so in his head. This is kind of like a really bad baseball manager who can't handle a bullpen or a rotation correctly. These are all former catchers. They think they know what they're doing, and they don't. It's like this is a former quarterback. He knows what he's doing, but he really doesn't. I think the thing that really bothers me about this is he has absolutely no feel on third down. Like, you can get two really good plays here, and then third down, doesn't matter what the distance is. It could be third and two. It could be third and eight. It could be third and 18. I don't trust this to convert because the guy calling plays there. Doesn't matter if he's up in the booth or on the sidelines. It's not this bad. He just doesn't have the feel for it. And again, like, I'm a Georgia fan. That's my alum. That's my team. You know, I go through the great stuff on Saturdays, and I go through the bad stuff with us on Sundays. And it's going to be Thursday this week, so thanks for freeing up my Sunday so I can do it early Christmas to my family. Anyway, like, I feel, you know, you look at the duo there of Kirby Smart and Mike Bobo and compare it to Raheem Morris and Zach Robinson. Kirby Smart's an elite adjuster. He's the best motivator I've ever seen. He's always a recruiter. Tactically, he's fine. I mean, I wouldn't say like he's ever going to really work in the NFL because I think he knows that. He's coaching before. He's like, you know what? I'd rather have the best players I can possibly get on the simplest plays as effectively as possible than try to out-scheme somebody. Maybe Raheem Morris can take a page out of Kirby Smart's playbook. I don't know if he did. We're talking about a guy that I don't think can do algebra anymore. And then as far as Zach Robinson's concerned, like Mike Bobo is the only offensive coordinator up for the Broyles Award, meaning he's one of the five best coordinators in college football. You know, you got the guy from Indiana, Matt Patricia, now at the Ohio State, the guy from Texas Tech, and then a guy from I don't remember who the other one is. Indiana, Texas. Oh, Miami, Corey Heatherman. There you go. That's the other guy. Mike Bobo has taken a lot of crap over the years as offensive play caller. He really would like get in his head, particularly in goal line situations. But having a quarterback he can trust who fits like hand in glove there with Gunnar Stockton, the whole playbook's open. They spread the ball around to everybody. They're not just trying to get it to Bijan Robinson every play. Yes, they throw the ball to Zach Wright Branch a lot, but they spread out to like Lawson Lucky, Oscar Delp. They've got a boatload of running backs, ton of wide receivers. And I don't think it matters, like, you know, it's great to see Georgia win as opposed to like Bijan Robinson have 200 all-purpose yards in the game and they lose by 40. Like, it doesn't do anything for anybody. I'll say this as fairly as I can. I thought it was going to work with Zach Robinson because I bought into the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan coaching tree. I really did. And now I realize, no, I don't know where we go from here. I kind of find myself sitting here thinking with Zach Robinson, like if he has done irreparable damage to his brand, these last 2 years have not been kind to him as an offensive coordinator. There's no mid game. It's either deep bombs or short stuff. And he just, you know, it's like a guy who's just afraid to call certain stuff because he knows he questions if his talent can do it. His talent's going to have to do it. You just have to call the right plays. Because when you call those plays that are in the middle route of the middle part of the field, then that potentially opens up some of the deeper stuff because they got to contain that too. And then, you know, it opens up the shorter stuff too because they got to respect the middle part. You know, you got to have a complementary offense. It can't just be one-dimensional. We can't let them personal people to death, and we can't be relying on good old Pistol Boy and Find a Way Man. I should probably get that poster framed if I could find it for Christmas. My mom would be like, "That's she'd be like, too funny." That's what she would say. All right, let's move on to our second half of the show with some pass. Arthur Blank's no longer a good owner. I'm sorry. At one point in time, he was. And maybe he's a really good dude. Maybe he wants to do a good job. But I don't know exactly when this occurred, but we have passed the Al Davis Rubicon. We don't go back to it being good. Like we've gotten into the eccentric octogenarian era of Arthur Blank's ownership. We're kind of there with Jerry Jones. We've been there with Mike Brown since birth. We were with Al Davis with that when I was growing up in the 2000s. I'm not going to say it is what it is, but like this is our reality. And the biggest thing that I would say here that leads me to know that he's no longer a good owner, not that he's become complacent about the losing. I don't think that that's even the case. I think that he treats the Falcons like a family as opposed to a business. And I think it's a very weird dichotomy because I think there's people who work for the Falcons up in Flyer Branch that kind of feel like they're on their heels all the time, you know, kind of always, you know, keeping their head in a swivel and around there. They're kind of playing nervous. I've kind of always felt that impact of the team on the field because they knew Arthur Blank's, you know, a shrewd businessman. But now it's kind of become family. It's kind of become like, you know, these are people that I really like. You know, I think Arthur Blank's been burned a few times by less than stellar individuals. But I mean, look, that's the nature of working. There are people I've worked with in all the different areas of my life who I don't care for. We all do. We're not different. This is just because people are people. But when you empower mediocrity, particularly a head coach and even a general manager in some capacities, what's that telling your players? What's that telling your support staff? What's that telling the people who work for you? More importantly, what's that telling the fans? And as I'm sitting here watching Raheem Morris, like, can't even tie his shoes, right? Like, I'm looking across the board at some of the other head coaches that were up for the job. You know, I'm glad we didn't get Belichick. I'm glad we were swayed away from hiring Belichick. That would have been great because he's been terrible for North Carolina. But we were never going to get Jim Harbaugh. Honestly, I don't want that psychopath anywhere near this team. Guy's insane. I would also say that, like, you know, why couldn't we hire Mike Vrabel, the Arthur Smith of it all? Look at Virginia Tech right now. Virginia Tech fired Brent Pry, who was a defensive coordinator under James Franklin. And Penn State's like, we know what we're done with James Franklin after an 0-3 start to the year. They hired him. And James Franklin's pretty much bringing everybody of note with him to Blacksburg, including Brent Pry. So Brent Pry is going to be back for the team in the role that he probably was better suited for. Instead of Virginia Tech head coach, he's a Virginia Tech defensive coordinator. I don't know how that's ever really happened. But, like, I know Freddie Gonzalez has served in a couple roles like that. Like Jerry Glanville. Things of that nature. Maybe that's happened in basketball because they're all retreads at this point anyway. But it's just very funny. And I guess to kind of get back to it with, like, the Arthur Blank of it all is, you know, you could have had Mike Vrabel. You could have had Mike McDonald, who kicked our ass. The guy went to Georgia. The guy went to Centennial High School up in Fulton County. He's in his late 30s. He's not yet 40. But Harbaugh saw value in him. He was with Michigan. He was the Ravens. Now he's with Seattle. He got full buy-in from his players this past offseason. Nobody missed any voluntary OTAs. This is a team that I couldn't really peg early in the season. I was carefully optimistic about them. But, you know, basically all the wins I thought the Cardinals were going to get, they've gained them too. So, you know, when you're seeing your mistake be compounded in real time, relentlessly, like, not only do we make the wrong hire, but the guy we could have hired is already over there, like, doing better. Like, you feel so stupid. Like, you feel like you're walking around with a Nokia brick phone when everybody else has an Apple or Android or some iPhone or Android at this point. Like, what are we doing? I will say that Arthur Blank tried. Arthur Blank has always tried. He's always tried to do good stuff for the city of Atlanta, and I'll always respect him for that. As a matter of fact, he was the commencement speaker when I graduated from UJ back in fall of 2012. So right around this time, what, 13 years ago? Jesus, I'm so old. But anyway, I don't know what we do here. I don't know if we hand the ball off to Josh Blake or some other thing at this point, but, like, the decision-making with this franchise has been poor all the way down. I came across what I think was Brett Jukes, who works for the team, and the process of how to hire Raheem Morris and what they went through. Like, it was just a running gag list of, like, all the things they did wrong in the hiring process. Look at it this way. You cannot keep employing somebody who doesn't win games to ask them to win games because it's, you know, it's just not happening. You know what? Let's move on to the last part of our show. Let's move on to it with some pun here. Let's make a pick against the spread for TNF. I've barely looked at this. I put about as much prep into this as Tony Romo or Raheem Morris, the Atlanta Falcons, because that's all the respect they deserve from me. Right now, looking at FanDuel Sportsbook, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are laying 4.5 points. The associated money lines are Tampa -235 and Atlanta +194. And the over-under total is 44.5. I'm taking Tampa to cover, man. I'm taking Tampa to win by 10, which will be an improvement over what we saw last week. So I think Atlanta's going to win something. I think Tampa's going to win something like, God, what, like 24-14. And at that point, I think that's, 34 + 4. I don't know. Take the under and the Buccaneers lay points. Like, that's kind of where I'm at with this here. Tampa's got something to play for. We don't. It's at their place. We swept them last year. They're on the precipice of sweeping us this year. I'd be pleasantly surprised if we won this game. The only way this happens is if, like, the Buccaneers just shoot themselves in the foot, which I don't envision it happening because Todd Bowles has actually figured out how to be a good head coach. Raheem Morris, not a clue. Not even one little effing clue. And this was episode 71 of the Blog and Dirty Podcast. You can follow me, John Bueller, on Twitter at Bueller118. You can follow the show on Twitter at Blog and Dirty. You can follow along on YouTube at Blog and Dirty FS. Give us a 5-star review on your platforms. Like, rate, listen, subscribe, review on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere there's podcasts. Again, give us a 5-star review. I'm grinding through this. Got some awesome playlists here on YouTube. You know, we got post games. We got our weekly shows. This is where this one's going to go. Got some interviews when we did that back in the day. We're over 350 subscribers. I'd love to get to 500 before the start of next year. I'll promise to keep bringing the heat as best as I can. You know, I'm wearing a jacket because, you know, I'm cool. I'm cool on this team. But you know what? You guys are cool. I've been enjoying every minute of this, even though this team is driving me absolutely insane. You're the best. Once again, thanks for listening. And this is the Blog and Dirty Podcast.